Hello and welcome to a podcast brought to you by The Religion of Aston Villa.
We're a social media account on Twitter and Facebook that wants to get our voices out there and heard, so please join us.
Hello, guys, and welcome to another episode. We are reviewing the, well, for me, a surprising win against Southampton. And we'll be also looking at the midweek fixture or the rearranged game against Leeds. I'm joined by Callum, as always. So diving straight into it, the lineup. What do you think? I mean, was you quite surprised? Because obviously there was a couple of changes, obviously. Chambers coming in, Young coming in, which obviously I think it was COVID, I believe, and then you had obviously Danny Ings and Watkins back up front. So the initial lineup before kickoff, what was your thoughts?
Yeah, there's always speculation around on Twitter about the reasoning behind the non-inclusion of Konsa and Luca Dean, but you know it's come to light that we believe that it's COVID or illness related problems. Otherwise, I think it was the team that you'd probably go with. I think it was only those two changes from the Brighton game, and they were probably forced changes late on, because Friday, I'm pretty sure in Gerrard's press conference, he said everything was fine and everyone was fine. So, you know, it was late changes to be made, but who else was going to fill into those spaces? And, you know, I think everyone was getting on the bandwagon of being like, oh, we're missing two of the five kind of back, regulars. This isn't going to go well. But, you know, it shows you what hindsight is. And, you know, they went out and performed on the pitch, and they let their talking on the pitch do, you know, show to everyone what they're really made of.
Yeah, exactly like you say. It probably would have been the starting 11 everyone would have probably gone for. Maybe, you know, some people would have probably gone one striker with Buendia in midfield, you know, if everyone was fit. But, you know, from a side note, it was also good to see Traore on the bench. There was quite a bit of speculation before the game that Bailey wasn't fit, so it was good to see him get onto the bench as well. And obviously a few of the youngsters as well making it. Well, got a bit to talk about. So the first half, I mean, the goal come very early. So what do you I mean, we'll go goal by goal and obviously any highlights in the middle of it. But obviously that first half, it was, you know, two goals either side, first half and another two in the second half. So that first goal, I mean, what do you think of it? Because I thought it was a great build up. Danny Ings' assist as well, which is good to see, linking up with his strike partner Watkins. But it was such a lovely turn as well by Watkins and to slot it home.
Yeah, it's nice to have us on the end of an early goal, because it always seems that we've been conceding early goals and trying to get back into the game. But, you know, the shoe was on the other foot this time and we're the one with the early goal. You know, it was lovely build-up. You know, Coutinho's basically on the halfway line. I thought it was a very strong pass into Ings. He's done very well to touch it down and then find the pass to Watkins. And, you know, he sent the defender to the shops. He's gone. He's gone down the tunnel. He's that far gone. It's a lovely turn. And, you know, I don't think he's getting as much credit as he deserves, because for not one moment does he put his head up. His head is facing the ball, you know, on the ground. And, you know, is it Forrester or Forster?
Forster.
He does get a slight nick on it, but luckily enough, Watkins knows where the goal is. And, you know, after a goal drought, really, you know, he's 2-2. You wouldn't probably expect that kind of finish from a striker with that, you know, low numbers. But fantastic finish, fantastic awareness, and a brilliant, brilliant turn to sell the defender away. And it's just what we needed. And, you know, 9 minutes in, we're on the front foot. And Southampton have to try and kind of play their way into the game again. So it favoured us massively, the early goal.
Yeah, it did. And like you said, I thought it was a bit heavy touch. And to be fair, that assist from Ings was superb as well. I mean, like, I know a lot of people are talking about the Coutinho one, which we'll come to in a bit for the Luiz. But I thought that was a really good assist. And it was very nice to take. And as you said, that little turn was you know, if that was like a Harry Kane or something like that, that'd be talked about a lot more than it was. But going, you know, carrying on from there, I mean, it should have been two. You know, Watkins, he slipped through, but then, you know, he only had force of the beast. But it was, you know, it was a outstretched leg that stopped it being two, and it did become a bit end to end just before before half time. So, I mean, what do you take? What do you think? Obviously, we get to the Luiz goal, but in between the goals, I thought it was quite end to end.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so in the entire game, Southampton only have one shot on target, and that's in the 60th minute, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we could have easily made it two and three, but, you know, before the Luiz goal, like you said, the Watkins chance with the outstretched leg from Forrester, I can't remember which one it freaking is. Then you had the Coutinho one, where he probably should have been scoring.
Yeah, 5 yards out.
Yeah, it comes to him quick, but he gets enough on it to put it goalwards, and you know his feet are there again. And then obviously you've got the Coutinho chance that he puts it just past the post, which half the ground must have thought it was in. You know, it's just fine margins, and luckily enough, you know, you look back at it and say, oh, it didn't cost us today, but sometimes it will, and you know, we've got to take every chance we can get. Southampton are a team known to, you know, leak goals. It could have been one of those days where we show, you know, like a 9-0 like Southampton have conceded before.
Well, this is the thing, like you said, is because just before the Luiz goal, Coutinho missed from 5 yards, and obviously Luiz puts away from 5 yards. And I know people, like I said, that the Coutinho, you know, we made it so easy for Luiz to put it away. But I just want to say, Chambers with that, like, I don't know what it was. It was kind of like, it kind of like just lofted over the top. It was like an outside of the foot swing. And it was absolutely pinpoint to Coutinho. It was so good. So, yeah, what do you think of the Luiz goal?
Yeah, it's basically a second phase from a corner. Coutinho has it about 25 to 30 yards out. And he basically plays a 1-2 with Chambers. Chambers spots the run, like you said, with an incredible pass, like a Pirlo Beckham kind of esque pass. Coutinho's onside, luckily enough. And how he just calmly just puts his foot out to put it across the 6-yard box for Luiz. And, you know, if it wasn't for Luiz, really, and, you know, and Chambers as well, I suppose, that isn't a goal. There's no one else. I mean, was Watkins behind, but there's possibility that there's a block or the keeper gets it or Ward-Prowse gets in front of him. So Luiz does really well to read the passage of play to actually get on the end of the pass from Coutinho. Luckily enough, you know, VAR doesn't go against us because it was onside. And, you know, that's Gerard Ball at his finest. Brilliant play, ending in a goal. Fantastic.
Going into half time, I'm going to say that Coutinho probably should have had a hat trick. Watkins should have been on a brace. You know, it was absolutely fantastic to see. And I was kind of nervous because 2-0 is just as lethal as anything for Villa. I mean, most teams say 1-0 is quite bad, you know, to be 1-0 up at half time. But even from a Villa standpoint, 2-0, I don't feel safe. I've got to at least be 4 for me to settle down. So I kind of looked at it. I was like, are we going to regret these, you know, the Watkins? I mean, obviously, Forster kept them in that game. It would have been a lot worse if they had a lesser keeper. So he was sensational, in all fairness, in that first half. So, I mean, obviously, we are 2-0 up at half-time. Is there any changes you would make at all, or do you just carry on?
What do you think?
Fair enough. Going into the second half, it didn't take long for little Phil to come good, and it was a bit of a It was a scruffy goal, shall we say, because obviously McGinn going down in the box, there's a few claret and blue shirts in there. And then, you know, he does, he puts the ball deflected through Forster's legs. So, yeah, I mean, the Coutinho goal was probably the scruff. You wouldn't even think that if you look at the goals scored and you said one of them is a, you know, a Villa player turning a player, you know, sending the defender the wrong way and shooting, you'd probably said that was a Coutinho one over his actual goal. So what do you think of that goal?
Again, you know, from the looking at the second goal as well, the second phases, again, you know, McGinn plays a free kick to the edge of the box where Luiz is, you know, waiting, and he strikes it. And it's kind of lucky with the deflection because it spins just out the way. I can't recognise who the Southampton defender is or the Southampton player is, but it gets its way back to McGinn. He goes round him. He goes down. I think it was rightly, you know, kind of waved away.
Yeah.
Then somehow Coutinho checks back onto his right foot, is able to find the space between four defenders and Forster, and puts it in the back of the net. And it's just, I think that everyone must have seen the photo going around by now of the shot, or the photo just as he's about to pull the trigger. And it's an incredible angle on how he's getting that ball through. But, you know, that's the Brazilian magic that we've got on the pitch right now, and we're paying the price for it in a good way. So, like you said, I mean, a little bit lucky, a little bit scruffy, but we'll take that every day.
Yeah, I mean, Coutinho was the best player on the pitch by country mile. Like there was nobody anywhere near the level of caliber that Coutinho was. To be fair. But carrying on with the second half, I mean, Forster again, even though I'm 3-0 down and, you know, heads have obviously gone for Southampton, he pulls off a very good save again, close range from Ings, which, you know, Dan Ings in that kind of position is lethal. You know, we all know that that's his kind of game. And then pretty much straight after that, coming off the, I think it was off the back of a set piece, Danny Ings slots it away to score against his former team. And I will say, I was quite happy that he didn't celebrate. I don't like it when they do that against former clubs. So I was kind of glad he didn't do that and show a bit of respect. But yeah, I mean, what do you think of that goal?
Again, it's a good work. It's Coutinho and Cash with a 1-2. Cash makes a lovely run down the line. It's not tracked. He looks up. You know, a few seconds before he strikes the ball, and you can only see Ings and Watkins, and there's there's six Southampton players in and around the 18-yard box, and he somehow picks out one of the two Villa players in the box, just in line with the penalty spot, and it's a great finish from Danny Ings. And you know, even though it's against his former club, it's a massive confidence boost for him. And, you know, it's starting to show that the Ings-Watkins partnership is paying off right now. It's a lovely strike into the corner and, you know, kind of finally a shot that Forster can't get to.
Yeah, and from there, I will say that even though we are 4-0 up, Southampton did have a couple of chances. I think there's one off the line. Bednarak headed it wide when he should have really tested Martinez. But other than that, I mean, it was just obviously getting really just the substitutes for Villa, you know, to give people a bit of playing time. You know, it was good to see Sanson coming on. As everyone knows, I'm a big admirer of his. But, you know, 4-0 win against a team that haven't been beaten in a while, I believe. I think it was about 5-6 games haven't been beaten him. You know, and they looked, coming into the game, I said I'd have took a draw and not played the fixture if I could have. So, shows how little I know. But, you know, that performance was sensational, and it was such a good, it was needed. It was kind of like the players could breathe because, you know, we've been on tender hooks with some of the results we've had. And obviously, you know, we did win last week, but we was due a big win. And obviously I'm very happy to come against Southampton, who we've had a bit of bad luck against, you know, recently, especially Nadino. So, overall, and obviously coming with a clean sheet as well, which is another bonus. I don't think he can really knock that performance at all. And I think it kind of gives Gerrard a headache if Konsa and Luca Dean are back. Do you play them? Do you not? But, you know, it's a good headache to have. But on the back of that, what do you think of the performance? I mean, is there any negatives you can take out of that?
I think the only, you know, the I suppose it's not really a negative when you've won a game, but we could have scored more. Yes, their keeper has kept them in it, but we could have scored more, and that's really the only thing that you could say. I mean, some people will look at the stats and be like, "Oh, we didn't have the possession," but Southampton had the ball and couldn't do anything with it. So I don't see a problem with that, especially when you're winning, especially when you're 4-0 up. I mean, the game was pretty much dead after the 60th minute. So being at the ground, it's not the best. I mean, obviously you're 4-0 up, so you're happy, but you know, there's basically two goals inside 2 minutes, or 2 or 3 minutes of the third and the fourth. So it was a long, I suppose it was a long second half because there was not much big chances or action like that. So no, I don't think it's many negatives apart from that. We could have scored more, and there's loads and loads of positives. And like you said, it's a massive headache for Gerrard. Now, I possibly think Chambers keeps his place, because if Konsa's replaced him, let's say, for that game, I don't think that second goal happens. So I can only see maybe Young being dropped if Dean is free. So, but we'll see. We'll see when we come to West Ham.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it is a good headache. I do agree that Chambers shouldn't lose his spot, because I thought he was superb. I thought he was very good. And he's for me, he starts above Konsa. I don't like changing a winning side, especially when you're winning 4-0 against a side above you. So if he does put Luca Dean on the bench, then so be it, you know. I agree with that decision if he does that. But I mean, there was a couple of things that I thought was quite interesting, which I didn't know until after the full time. And that was the fact that Ollie Watkins is now, since the start of last season, only Kane and Vardy have scored more Premier League goals as an Englishman than Ollie Watkins. And to be fair, I didn't know that until after the full time, because I thought that he, I wouldn't say he's not done that bad, but he's literally only scored four less than Jamie Vardy. So
yeah, and wasn't it 10 more than Kane?
Yeah, Kane's got 10 on him. Yeah, he's got 31 for Kane, 25 for Vardy. Kane on 31, Vardy on 25, and then Ollie Watkins on 21. Obviously, I'm not trying to say Watkins is in their breath, because he's not. but you know, it kind of shows you where he is. And like I say, a lot of people, including myself, have said they need to be dropped and. Over the time, because obviously poor form, you know, means to get poor reviews. But that game kind of showed you, and I said this before, that if he gets a goal, he always seems to go on a bit of a run. And thankfully, he's proven me right. So yeah, I mean, going into the player ratings, can I have your ratings for the back five, please?
So I'll give Martinez a 7. There was nothing much to do. I mean, he made one fantastic save from Shea Adams in the second half, but that's about it. You know, I think his shirt was pretty much clean by the end of the game. Cash will be an 8. Great performance from him and another assist. Chambers, an 8, because that pass. Mings, an 8. Another brilliant performance for, you know, the captain. And Young... I mean, I was tempted to give him a 6.5, but we didn't do half ratings, so I'll give him a 7, because he was definitely the quietest out of the defence.
Yeah, I agree with all that completely. Yeah, like you said, Martinez ain't going to put a wash on after the game. He ain't going to worry about getting his shirt washed and dried, so he's easy on. Cash, I thought he had a very good game. Chambers as well. I mean, like you say, Young was probably the quietest. as you say. We do seem to struggle a little bit with that left-hand side. I mean, even when Luka Dean plays, you know, there's just not been up to where I want him to be, if that makes sense. Maybe I'm putting him on too high of a pedestal. But, yeah, we just kind of seem to be... the left-backs just seem to be a bit behind the rest of the defence in my ratings and performances. McGinn, Louise and Ramsey, please.
McGinn, 8. Louise, an 8. I suppose because he scored. And, you know, Ian Wright even shouted him out on Match of the Day, saying how good he was. So he's probably got his Arsenal head being like, oh, we'll go going for him in the summer. And Ramsey, I'm going to have to give a 6. Because, again, you know, I see a lot of people say criticising him for having quiet games. But I think that's just because he's had a good amount of very good games in recent weeks. So he's just, you know, he's kind of been in that purple patch. And now he's just, I wouldn't say he's there to make the numbers up, but he's just, you know, there because he's a good all-round player, but he's not showing it at the moment. You know, I suppose when Coutinho, Watkins and Ings are stealing the limelight, you know, that will happen. So, yeah, it's a 6 for me for Jacob Ramsey because, you know, he's not putting up trees as he was the last few weeks, but we shouldn't expect that every week from a young lad. So it's an all right performance from him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like I'm just agreeing for the sake of it, but no, that's my rough down. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to change a winning side, but if I am going to make a change, it probably would be Ramsey to come out for Buendia. And then, you know, just have McGinn and Buendia just in front of Louise. You know, just in that, to see if we can get... I know Buendia is more of a right wing or, you know, sitting behind in the hole, but I'd like to see him on the pitch, especially with Ramsey being quiet. I mean, even if it comes to it, I'd be quite happy to see Sanson take his position, or maybe, you know, like a Leon Bailey, maybe. And but obviously, don't change the winning side. So if he sticks with it, then fair play. But yeah, like you said, Ramsey's had such a good performance. Like, he's been getting solid 9s and 10s. With his performances, but yeah, of the last couple of games, he's been a bit quiet, shall we say. So maybe next week again. Oh, sorry, maybe in the middle of this week against Leeds, he comes good. Coutinho, Danny Ings, and Watkins. Quite interested in what you're going to give on Leeds.
They're all going to get a 9, actually. I think Coutinho shines just a bit brighter than everyone else. I have to say, I think it's Ings' best game in a Villa shirt so far, with two assists and 1 goal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for me, that's his best game. And then Watkins, I mean, he's turned the defender on a sixpence, and his constant work rate, just brilliant. And they're starting to, you know, figure out this system of, you know, the two up front, and then Coutinho sits and just free roams kind of thing. So, and that, you know, those three were just feeding off each other all game. So just brilliant from all of them.
I gave Watkins, like I said, we don't do half ratings, so I gave Watkins an 8. I thought he was very good. But I thought Ings was a 9. Like you said, best performance in a Villa shirt, 2 assists and a goal. Arguably should have had a brace, same as Watkins, to be fair. They should have had 2 each. But Ings' best performance in the Villa shirt, as she said, and little Phil gets a 10. He was genuinely unplayable. Should have had an hat trick, in all fairness. He was unreal. And I really just hope we can get this contract signed, sealed, and delivered. Even if it means we have to announce it before the end of the season, we've just got to get this man signed up because he is absolutely phenomenal. And like I say, when I don't really want to mention Jack Grealish, but when Jack Grealish gave a 10, that's a Coutinho 8. You know, that's the difference. Grealish has potential to be world class. Coutinho is world class, and I really hope that we can get this guy tied down. The substitutes in Morgan Sanson, Buendia, and Leon Bailey.
All three. Buendia have a chance late on?
Yeah.
That's about it for the. Bailey had a few decent runs. So I'll give them to a six, Bailey and Buendia, and then Sanson a five.
Yeah, I agree with that. Didn't really do much. Like I say, it was just good to get them some minutes. I would like to see Traore get some minutes, if I'm honest. But, you know, I'm not really going to complain about that when we're 4-0 up. So yeah, I'll take that. Going into the second part of the podcast is obviously we've got a midweek game, which was a rearranged game against Leeds. Obviously, Bielsa has gone. The new manager's come in. And obviously, I hate playing against a team with a new manager. Normally, it comes and bites you on the arse. And obviously, being Leeds, who have their best game of the season every season against us, home and away. I'm interested what your thoughts is on this. So do you do any changes at all? Is there anything you adjust with the squad, or, you know, so what would your lineup be?
I think we've said it enough this podcast, and it's don't change a winning team. And I reckon we stay with this team that beat Southampton. You know, when you beat a team like that in the way that we did, no changes required for me.
Yeah, same. I wouldn't change it. Like I say, if it comes to it, probably Ramsey and Young might be the only two, you know, and bring Luka Dean back in. Ramsey's not been performing that well. So, you know, do you bring in somebody a bit more feisty like a Sanson or a Buendia, you know, just because it is going to be, they am going to come for us like they always do. But either way, I think it's going to be a tasty game. How do you think it's going to go? Because obviously it's a new manager. You know, interesting to see if the Leeds have a full fit squad, if everyone's going to be back. But, you know, they are on a bit of a free-for-all at the minute. So, yeah, I mean, how do you think it's going to go?
Yeah, you know, you do say they're on a bit of a free-for-all. But, you know, against Leicester at the weekend, they probably were the better team by quite far. You know, on the stats, that is definitely... but you know they lost, and you know they've, I think it's, you know, quite a few losses, 1, 2, 3, 5 losses in a row since they last played us. So you know, losses to Everton, United, Liverpool, Tottenham, and Leicester. You know, conceding a bunch of goals. You know, even when they played us, they conceded 3, but managed to keep a draw. You know, they've not actually won a game since the 2nd of January. That was against Burnley. So, you know, it goes quite a long way back since Leeds have got something in a game. And, you know, I think the game we played with them is the last time they got a point. It's going to be tough. You know, like you said, they always turn up for the game against us, which is just interesting. New manager, obviously, like you said, Bielsa's gone. It's always going to be tough, no matter what, for the Leeds team. You know, it'd be massive for us to get a win, keep this winning run going, and keep this momentum going, because we have got a good chance of finishing top 10 now. You know, we said it a few podcasts ago, few games can change the season, and you know, we could have been looking at, you know, maybe 14th right now, but instead we're looking at 11th and potentially looking at 10th and 9th finishes for the rest of the season. So if we want to have a top half finish, we've got to beat teams like this. You know, Leeds are down there, but at the same time, they are a good team and they'll be well up for it. And hopefully they have that new, they'll be hoping they've got their new manager boost at, definitely at, for the first time at home. So we'll see, you know, it's just going to be, it will be tough. According to fantasy football, they've still got Llorente, Lee Cooper out, another defender. Possibly they've got out Tyler Roberts. I know that their new manager was talking about him being injured or having an injury at the end of the game. Calvin Phillips still out. Kelvin Phillips, should I say, is still out. And that's it for Leeds for injuries. It's potential that Concert and Dean are fit. Like we said earlier, we don't know if we'll change a winning side or not. So we'll have to see. Hopefully We need, it's not like we need a win, but we'd like a win to keep on continuing this run and momentum. And you never know, you keep on going up the league.
So, yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, we have just got to keep climbing the table, just got to keep beating the opponents in front of us. I mean, Leeds are, as I said earlier, on a bit of free-for-all. They are 2 points off the bottom three. Burnley have got a game on them. And obviously, from our point of view, we're on the level points with Palace, who's 10th. But we've got two games on them. And we've got a game on in hand, which is obviously, I'm going to assume, this game, against Southampton. So, if obviously we can beat Leeds, we can leapfrog Southampton on goal difference. Obviously, putting four past them has put them on to -7, and we're sat on zero. So, you know, if all goes to plan, we could be coming out on Thursday night sat in 9th position, which is then we're only 4 points off Wolves, who sat in 8th, and having, everyone will say, a storming season. So we can sneak into that top 10, maybe top 8 bracket, if, you know, games go our way. I know we've got a couple of hard fixtures like Arsenal, West Ham coming up. But if we can put these games to bed, you know, it gives us a very good, you know, a chance of trying to finish in the top 10, because some of the teams, like I said, Palace, Southampton, you know, Brighton recently as well, have all kind of dropped away a little bit as well. And obviously Leicester have not been doing the best either. You know, they've been a bit hot and cold. Predictions. How do you think the game's going to go, and who will be your goal scorers, if any?
I'm going to go with a win.
Oh.
And I'm going to go, it's going to be 2-0 or 2-1. And I'd like it to be Watkins and Coutinho.
I think it's going to be 2-1. Like I said, I did tweet this out. It could be anything from a 4-0 to a 4-4. You know, it's just, and the 4-0 could go either way, because it's just an absolute manic fixture. But I do think it's going to be 2-1. And I think it's going to be Watkins, because as I say, once he scores, he seems to score again the week after that. He goes on a bit of a run. And I think the other one, now I've slated him a little bit, Jacob Ramsey will be back in fine form and scoring. And yeah, so I think it's going to be a very interesting game. And hopefully when we come to our podcast on the weekend, we'll be talking about 6 points taken from Leeds and West Ham, which will be lovely. On to the final section of the podcast is the old loan watch. So how have we been getting on?
Well, as you know, I try and keep up to date with most of the loan players out there at the moment. And currently, as we're recording this, we have got a few players playing at the moment. But I'll get onto that a little bit later. So we'll start off, as we seem to do, in the Premier League, as there's only one player out on loan in the Premier League, and that is Matt Target. He's played 4 games for Newcastle. He's played all the minutes that he possibly can, and he's not lost the game yet. He's nearly took maximum points as well. It's kind of crazy. And it's, you know, the rumours have been going around that he might get a permanent move in the summer for about £50 million. So I think people would take that, to be honest. So that's Matt Target. Trezeguet over to Turkey for Istanbul Beşiktaş. He's now taken his tally to 4 goals for this season, you know, scoring against Beşiktaş in a 2-2 draw most recently, getting 85 minutes in that game. But, you know, he's already scored, you know, 4 goals, and that's, he's nearly, well, he's basically halfway there in his goals for Villa in all of his time for playing for Villa. So, also rumours about him possibly going in the summer. Another player with rumours going in the summer, Frederick Gilbert, still in the Strasbourg team, constantly getting 90 minutes, gained an assist a few games ago to take his assist total to 4 for the season. And a pretty decent mid-table team in Strasbourg. He's doing well in that team. So I reckon he will go out there on a permanent deal, which is unfortunate because I do think he likes the club, and it's a play that I thought we should have given a chance. But he's got Matty Cash in front of him. So we go to the Championship. The first player, Jadon Philogene-Badintz, a player who was injured the last time we were speaking on our podcast. He did feature briefly in a 1-0 loss to Blackpool in their last game after coming back from injury. Obviously, they're bringing him back in slowly, which is, you know, beneficial for us because obviously they don't want to rush him back in and get another injury. But he is on the bench for tonight's game and against Barnsley, which they are 36 minutes into. Next is Keenan Davis, a player who his goals may have dried up, but his performances haven't. You know, he's still playing. You know, he's got about 100 minutes under his belt since the last time we spoke. 200 minutes under the last time we spoke. No goals, no assists for that, but he's a massively a big team player. From what I hear from friends and family about Forrest. So, and again, another player who was linked to a move away in the summer. keeping it in the Championship and keeping with strikers, it's Cameron Archer this time. Another goal this time at the weekend against Bournemouth, so against a big team in the Championship, in a 2-1 victory, should I say. Taking his tally up to 5 for the season, which is fantastic for him. You know, a lot of people probably didn't think he'd go to the Championship. Me included, I really didn't think he'd get a Championship move. But there he is. He's got 5 goals. And if he can make it double digits, that'll be fantastic for this season. And there's no reason why he can't. Staying in the Championship for the last player. Some bad news, unfortunately. You've probably seen it all over Twitter and Facebook, and we've put a post about it. And that's Jed Steer. Unfortunately, coming off injured in the 14th minute against Chelsea in the FA Cup, you know, possibly could have helped Luton beat the European champions, but it wasn't meant to be. It looks like an Achilles injury, and going off. Nathan Jones, the manager of Luton, he says it's a bad injury, or it doesn't look very good, but it'll be down to us to make a statement about that, because he's our player, so I can see him possibly getting recalled and having the treatment that he's needed, and he, you know, he'd probably be let go in the summer, which is a shame, because he's owed a lot of this club for that, you know, that penalty shootout against West Brom, and you know, that Championship season. So, which is it's a big shame for him, because he was coming into his stride and performing very well week in, week out. We drop down to League One, where we visit MK Dons, where Kane Kessler-Hayden is. He's in and around the first team. He's playing at the moment, which is funny enough, he's playing against another Villa loanee out, and that is Aaron Ramsey, who's at Cheltenham, because it's MK Cheltenham tonight. Currently MK 2-0 up. No goal involvements for Kane Kessler there. As I've just mentioned him, Aaron Ramsey, he's playing games and he's getting minutes, but nothing for goals involvements, which I'm sure he'll want to improve. You know, he's had no goal involvements in 8 games for Cheltenham. A little bit disappointing, I suppose, but at least he's getting minutes in men's teams action. And then the final player down into League Two this time is Louis Barry with Swindon. Picked up an injury, I believe, in the last game. Not involved at the weekend and not involved tonight for Swindon Town. So I am believing it is an injury. And with his posts on social media, I think that also explains his you know, his words and his what he's been saying. So hopefully he'll come back because he needs minutes and he needs to gain that confidence. It might be a loan out again in the summer. It probably will be. He's probably going to be way too far behind. You know, the likes of Cameron Archer, Davis, if he stays, and, you know, well behind Ings and Watkins. So hopefully he'll continue with a loan deal next year. But it seems like he's playing as a left winger kind of player. So, but he can play there and he can play up front. So we'll see about that. And that wraps up the loan market, as it were. Obviously, there's a lot more players out on loan at the moment, but not all of them getting game time. The likes of Harahan Wesley, Caleb Chukwuemeka, and players like that. And we don't want to go too low as well to like the National League North and things like that, because we don't want this to drag on as much as it does already.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. It's just a couple of things I want to talk about just before we go, just because obviously it's Villa related and one of them is obviously a loan player. It's just a quick, what do you think about Matt Target in 50 million? I mean, do you think that's good business from Newcastle side or Villa side? I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, to say that we bought Matt Target for 15 million in the first place, and that's going back, what, is it 4 years in the summer?
Yeah.
I mean, 26, he's probably got, you know, 4-5 good years left in him. His transfer market value has increased since being with us. According to transfer market, apparently we paid 13.95 million for him. So, and the rumours are 15 million from Newcastle. But, you know, I suppose the ball is kind of in our court, and will Newcastle be willing to pay whatever we ask them? Maybe. Homegrown player. You know, he'd have had 6 months with them already. So it would be ideal for them to take Matt Target. So I think it'd be good business on our end to say that, you know, it's a player that was brought in. All right, we've not gained massive amounts of money on him, but then again, we've not lost massive amount on him like we have with other players in recent times. So, I reckon it'd be decent business. And I think a lot of people would take 15 million, as a lot of people don't really rate him that highly. So, yeah, we'll have to see on that one.
I feel a bit negative towards it, to be fair, being a bit controversial as always, but I kind of think it's a bit too cheap. And this is my reasoning. I'm not going to drag it on too long, but it's just just my reasoning behind why I'm a bit upset about that. I think we should be more. No, it's not just about, obviously, Newcastle have got unlimited funds, but the reason is it kind of compares to when we signed Mings. Now, when we took Mings on loan, it kind of exactly the same as Target. Bournemouth fans were like, why are you bothering? He's, you know, he's injury. Obviously, Target's not injury prone. He's just not good enough. He's never made it, blah, blah, blah. Took him and he had like a massive affinity to the fans. We overpaid, in my opinion, at the time. Obviously, Maguire went for 80 million or whatever it was, so it made it look like a snip in the end. But at the very time it happened, I thought that was overpaid for the price we paid for somebody who, you know, had only really had a good 6 months, really, in his career. I think it was due to the affinity with the fans and how well the fans loved him was why we overpaid. Now, that kind of ties in with Target and the Newcastle fans. The Newcastle fans absolutely love him. Like I said, my brother is a Newcastle fan, and by all accounts, they love him. Like, he's just, they just don't understand why we've let him go. And because of that reasoning, I think we could get a lot more than the 15 million. Now, I'm not going to sit and say that he's brilliant. Luca Dean's a far better left back, and Matt Target admitted that himself. But I just think that we should try and get every penny we can out of Newcastle to get him. Now, I'm not going to say, like I said, I think we should go for 30 million right now. I know that sounds mental, but 15 million, we paid more for Matty Cash, who was A, in the Championship, B, okay, there's only 2 years difference between them, and three is he's only played at right back for a good 12 months prior. Before that, he wasn't even a right back. He was playing in midfield. So I just think that if a Championship, 15 million is just Championship money, in my opinion. So I think for a guy who's had, what, nearly, well, over over 100 Premier League appearances. He was, what was he, player of the season or players player of the season last season? He had a phenomenal year as well with Jack. He was on the cusp of England, which obviously, which is always adds a tax. I just think 15 million is a bit too cheap, in my opinion. If we could settle on 25, 20 million with 5 million add on, sound, yeah, great, okay. I've seen people back at me on Twitter saying, you're not going to get Luka Dean money, which I appreciate. But I just think that, you know, there's a lot of boxes that are being ticked where we could get more money. I don't know what you think, whether you think I'm being mental or whether you think, no, just offload, get what we can. Or do you think I've got a little bit of a point? I don't know.
I think you've got a point. Obviously, you know, it helps how we know the financial status of Newcastle. But it'll be obviously, will they look elsewhere? You never know. You know, they might go, oh, if you're willing, if you're wanting 20 million, oh, we'll go and sign some random guy that we've scouted and hope he's better. So it's going to be in Newcastle's court, really, deciding on what they do. But I suppose if you're breaking even on a player 4 years down the line, that's better than losing money on a player 4 years down the line. So I see both sides. So, I think you've got a point.
And the final thing before we go is just obviously that the, I'm not going to bore people with it, but the Villa accounts come in. And it just kind of showed that the losses fell from 100 million from last year, while total revenue shot up by exactly 71 million to a club record of 183.6 million. And obviously that is down to obviously, you know, COVID obviously played its part. Finishing 11th helped as well. And you know, which is from like all the footballing authors and things like that out there, they're saying that, you know, Villa's showing that they're very in a very good position financially, which is obviously that ties in with financial fair play, which obviously affects our spending. So boy, from what everyone says, because I'm not an accountant, I have no clue what this all means, but it boils down to literally that we should have a very, very tasty summer, which is something every fan loves to hear. But yeah, I mean, there is some articles out there on it. There's one I looked at earlier by a Dr. Dan Plumley, I think his name was, if I remember it right. He spoke with Football Insider, and I think he did some stuff with the Birmingham Mail, I believe, if you have a read up on that, just to tell you how it, you know, what it basically means. But basically, we're going to have a very good summer if we need one, which obviously is something we need when we're trying to convince a guy to leave Barcelona for Aston.
Yeah, you know, tying into that accounts, it all, we also heard of Christian Perslow in that stating that we would that the stadium would get well looked at for increased capacity, and you know, plans being drawn up and things like that. So it's only good news, and hopefully it could come, you know, by the end, well, maybe not by summer, but definitely by next you know, end of the season, we could be looking at a 55 or so thousand capacity stadium.
Yeah, which would be absolutely brilliant. I've said a few times I've struggled. To be fair, I've been trying to get Villa tickets most of the season and I've struggled to get them. Took my daughter to her first game. It has literally been sold out. But when you hear there's a waiting list of X amount, 1,000 fans, you know, it's expected. Obviously, I don't have the Lions Club and all that, which I know it's something I'm going to have to pay for, but it's obviously, I just want to take her to one game to see if she's into it. So then I can, you know, make the financial investment in buying that. But yeah, I think I'll have to wait for the friendlies in the summer, I think. Take a Walsall away as we all go. Well, there you go, guys. Thank you for listening. Like I say, we will be back. We have got two games in between this podcast and the next one, which is obviously the Leeds game and the West Ham one. So we will be recording Sunday after the West Ham game. Like I say, hopefully it is 6 points and we're going to be closing that gap on the top eight, which would be lovely. But yeah, thank you guys for listening, and up the Villa.